We're reading in book 7, the book of yoga, And we've reached Canto 4, the triple soul forces. Last week we started to read this canto, and we read up to page 511. But I think now we'll go back to the beginning and read the study the first section, which is about the Madonna of Compassion. Page 503. Page 503. So we'll look at the first section, which is goes up to page 508, and then we'll read on from there. Who will begin today? You will begin, Jana.
On past she in her spirit.
No. Page 503, Triple Soul Forces.
Here, from a low and dark and listless ground, the fashion of the earth has sent below. A moon bright face in a song cloud of hair, a woman seeking the pale, lustrous moon. The verdured and verdured soul was her bare seat. Beneath her feet, a sharp and one-named stone. A divine feet on the peaks of the world, a spirit that touched by the grief of all that lives, she looked out far and saw from inner mind this questioning labeled world of outward things, of false appearance and fuzzy shapes. This dubious cosmos stretched in the ignorant void, the tank of earth, the tone and speed of the star, and the difficult birth and dolorous end of life.
Thank you. Savitri is on this inner search to find her soul. We've seen her pass through the subtle physical layers, the different layers of life, mind, and beyond. And now she is feeling the silent nearness of the soul. Of the soul. But before she actually reaches the soul, we have this quite long canto, which is called the Triple Soul Forces. Shobindor says that this experience is happening in inner mind. He mentions that several times in this canto. And there she has these symbolic experiences of meeting with three powers of the soul. And the first one is this divine pity. But it's described in a very dramatic and picturesque way that we can easily imagine. There's a start of an ascent. Savitri will have to go higher. But first, on this low, flat, prone, listless ground, seems to be without much life. the passion of the first ascent began. And she sees this woman with a capital W, with a moon bright face in a dark cloud of hair. She's wearing a pale but shining robe. And she's sitting on the ground, a rugged and ragged soil was her bare seat. It's rough, stony ground. And beneath her feet, she's got a sharp and wounding stone. These are all symbolic aspects. She embodies a divine pity on the higher levels of the world. She is a spirit who is touched by the grief of all that lives. She's looking out far and can see from this seat in inner mind, she can see this questionable world of outward things, this dubious, ambiguous, material world, this world of outward things, of false appearances, plausible shapes. They convince us that they exist, but if somebody is plausible, you shouldn't really be too convinced by them. This dubious cosmos stretched in the ignorant void. She sees all the pangs and pains of Earth. She sees the stars, the toil of the stars. Sri Aurobindo often mentions that the stars are working hard, that there's a lot of effort and energy going into these stars. As they move swiftly through space. And she sees the difficult birth and dolorous end of life. Being born is difficult, and the end of life may be full of sorrow and pain. Is it clear? Passion, some intensity, and some intense feeling.
How do you interpret ragged soul? Usually we think of cloth as ragged, but...
Ragged, I think he's put it there for this lovely sound. Rugged and ragged soil. It's rough and stony. That's the two suggestive words. And the suggestive sounds of the words. So there's a picture. Susmita.
Accepting the universe as a body of
woe.
The mother of the seven sorrows bore the seven steps that pierces her bleeding heart. The beauty of sadness lingered on her face. Her eyes were dim with the ancient stain of tears. Her heart was riven with the world's agony and burdened with the sorrow and struggle in time. An anguish music trailed in her wrecked voice, absorbed in a deep compassion's ecstasy, lifting the mild ray of her patient gaze. In soft, sweet, training words, slowly she spoke.
Thank you. So woe is sorrow and suffering. So she's accepted this whole material universe as her own body. She's identified with this as her body of suffering. And the image that comes is quite familiar in a Christian context. We have this image of the heart of Jesus or the heart of Mary, with the seven stabs, the daggers, and the blood flowing out.
Why seven?
I think these are the levels of existence, which Sri Aurobindo speaks about also in The Life Divine, these seven planes which make up existence.
I think in a Catholic way is the seven sin, like, I don't remember.
Yes, for each of the levels, like there's a sin, no? Yes, and those sins cause suffering to the compassionate divine. The universe is her body of woe because it is separated somehow. It's a world of duality and unconsciousness and suffering. And so if there are seven levels of existence in this universe, for each of them there's a particular kind of pain. Well, these pains are spread all over the universe.
But
here, he says, she herself is to be found in this level of inner mind. And he describes her very poignantly, this beauty of sadness. She is beautiful, but the sadness is there in her face. Her eyes are dim with the ancient stain of tears. She's been supporting this sorrow for a very long time. And her heart is riven, it is broken, split with the agony, all the terrible sufferings of the world. And it's burdened, loaded with the sorrow and struggle in time.
Yes, here there is a parallel with Jesus Christ, that he showed all the sorrow of the humanity.
Please take books. We are on page 503. Yes, this is interesting, no? She's in a kind of trance of compassion, intense, passionate compassion. Mm-hmm. She's a divine being, so there is some special kind of bliss which is supporting her, the ecstasy of a deep compassion. And she speaks in soft, sweet, training words. She's this anguished music, a very, very sad, sorrowful music trailed in her rapt voice. She's in a state of rapture, in a way, this ecstasy of deep compassion. Yeah.
In Indian mythology, there is some deity expressing this compassion.
No. I mean, later on we come to a similar Madonna who says that she expresses herself as Durga and Kali. But I don't know of any think we should stick with what Sri Aurobindo says. He says there are three powers of the soul. And when we've reached the end of the canto, we will have a look at that and see what he might mean by that. But we know that pity and compassion is one expression of our soul when we turn to the world and we feel, oh, things should not be like this. This is a kind of suffering that comes to the soul. Huta has painted some wonderful pictures of this, of the weeping soul. So let's see what she says about who she is and what is her mission. Stefania.
Oh, Savitri, I hand thy secret soul. To share the suffering of the world I came. I draw my children's pains into my breast. I am the nurse of the dolor beneath the stars. I am the soul of all who wailing writhe under the ruthless hero of the gods. I am woman, nurse and slave and beaten beast. I tend the hands that gave me cruel blows. The hearts that spurred my love and zeal I serve. I am the captive queen, the pampered doll. I am the giver of the bowl of rice. I am the worshipped angel of the house. I am in all that suffers and that cries. Mine is the prayer that climbs in vain from earth. I am traversed by my creature's agonies. I am the spirit in a world of pain.
Thank you.
I am
traversed
by my creature's agony. In French, traversé is to cross.
Yes.
Does it have the same meaning?
I think it means that all the sufferings of her, of the children, pass through her. She feels them all. And she says, my children, so she's an aspect of the mother. And she says, Savitri, I am thy secret soul. We shall see that each of these forces says that. But these are not the real soul that she's looking for. These are expressions, these are powers of the soul expressing themselves in the world. And she's come to share the suffering of the world, and I draw all the pains of my children. I nurse all this suffering, the dolor, the pain that is beneath the stars.
I tend the hands that gave me cruel blows, the hearts that spurned my love, I serve.
I think any Indian woman would be able to explain these lines to you. Yes. Wait a minute, wait till we get there. I want to say something about this phrase, under the stars. The ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle had a picture of the universe in which there were the heavenly bodies were actually, we were seeing them as light appearing through spheres. There were all these spheres, the sphere of the stars and the sphere of the different planets and the sphere of the moon, and then at the center is the earth. And all those other spheres are perfect. And as they move, they make a music, the music of the spheres. It's something wonderful, divine, harmonious. It's only actually beneath the moon level, here on earth, that there's suffering and pain. So everything else in the universe is perfect. It's only here that there's suffering. That's why she says, I'm the nurse, I look after all this pain that's here under the stars. I'm even the soul. I share the soul suffering of all those who are wailing, writhe under the ruthless harrow of the gods. The harrow is the sharp part of the plow. When the farmer is ploughing, he ploughs to cast his seed. No? So here is what it suggests, that the cosmic powers, the gods, they are plowing the earth in order to further its growth. But we are the ones, we are like the little worms who get hurt by the harrow. We even have an adjective, harrowing, something that's very, very painful. And when he says writhe, that's what the poor little worms do when they are caught under the harrow. So all the suffering that is happening, it's part of this work of the gods. It causes suffering to all us earthly creatures. But she is with us. She is in our soul and helping us.
This Savitri dictionary gives a slightly different definition of harrow, shall I read it?
Yes.
A heavy farming instrument made of timber and fitted with teeth, used to even off plowed ground, but which tears as it goes.
Tears as it goes.
So it's kind of like a big rake.
Yes.
For doing the whole field at once. That's what this says.
In my mind, it's that sharp metal part. But anyway, whatever it is, the...
It's harrowing.
It's harrowing, yes. Painful, yes.
I'm very familiar with harrows because I grew up on a farm.
Okay, you tell us.
Well, it's a combination of all of what you're saying, but it's more diabolical than a rake. And pulled by a tractor, it will have more rows of these teeth that dig.
Mm.
And they're spaced according to the crop. And it is not nice to get caught in that.
No.
What is that? It's
not nice to be caught in with that.
Yeah, because it has a cutting edge.
It's cutting the soil. Mm. As it's coming through, it's breaking it up and cutting it. And cutting it up in smaller bits than the plow.
Okay, just the rough stuff, mm-hmm. And then the harrow comes after.
And after the harrow comes the planting.
Mm. Thank you, Patricia.
You're welcome.
Agricultural expertise. There's a seat here if you like, dear. If you want to come and sit. Bring a book. Okay. Sit here. But the next lines, she identifies with all women. You know, it's really very, very touching for us. These are some of the roles that women play traditionally. No? Nurse, slave. We have to do what we are told in the family. We may even be used as a beaten beast. That happens in our villages around here. But nevertheless, whatever we are, slave or beaten beast, the woman is the one who looks after, I tend those same hands that gave me cruel blows. And the idea is that it is natural for women to serve with love and enthusiasm, no, but it's not always appreciated. There's even a very, very poignant meditation or prayer of the mother where she says that I prepared the meal with so much love, but then when the man came, he refused it. So I've offered it to you, Lord. So these kind of things. I go on serving those hearts that spurn my love, reject it, my love and my zeal, my eagerness to serve. But then there's another role as the courted queen, or the pampered doll. You're not really allowed to be a human being, you're a doll, and you have to look beautiful and be always sweet and smiling. And receive gifts and so on. But in India, of course, also the woman of the house is the one who serves the rice and is the worshipped angel of the house. No, I think the Indian wife is the she brings the blessings into the house. At least she's supposed to represent that. I'm in everything that suffers and cries out. And I pray to the higher forces, but my prayer climbs in vain. This is one characteristic of this aspect of the soul. The prayer is in vain. It doesn't get the hoped for answer. I feel all the acute sufferings, the agonies of my creatures. I'm the spirit in a world of pain. The spirit, the divine power which is suffering with all of us. Yes.
What is from the other Madonnas not, or do you have some ideas why?
I'd like us to remember this as a characteristic of this first Madonna, and then when we compare the three of them at the end, I'll say something about that. Yeah. So we can go on, Ellen.
The scream of tortured flesh and tortured hearts falling back on heart and flesh unheard by heaven has rent this helpless grief and roused my soul. I have seen the peasant burning in his hut. I have seen the slashed corpse of slaughtered child, heard woman's cry ravished and stripped and hailed amid the bays in the hell-hound mob. I have looked on. I had no power to save. I have brought no arm of strength to aid or slay. God gave me love. He gave me not his force. I have shared the toil of the yoked animal drudge, pushed by the god and encouraged by the beast. I have shared the fear-filled life of bird and beast, its long hunt for the day's precarious food, its coward sleek and crouch and hungry prowls, its pain and terror seized by beak and claw. I have shared the daily life of common men, its petty pleasures and its petty cares, its press of troubles and haggard heart of ease, earth's trail of sorrow, hopeless, of relief, the unwanted, tedious labor without joy, and the burden of misery and the strokes of fate.
Thank you. I think this passage shows Sri Aurobindo's amazing compassion and identification with all the sufferings of the earth also.
I frankly find it hard to understand how it's a power of the soul, because it's like weak, no? Compassion is one thing, but Sri Aurobindo's compassion is not weak.
Sri Aurobindo's compassion is not weak.
This person is just suffering and miserable. How can this be anything from the soul? I don't get it, frankly.
Okay, I was going to save this for the end, but maybe I should say it now. There are these three soul forces. The divine soul, of course, is not weak. It is not. These are each of them. They say, Savitri, I am thy secret soul. But they are not the secret soul. They are qualities, expressions of the soul. And it is my theory, this is my personal theory, I haven't found it in any of the other scholars, that these represent the three gunas. When the divine expresses itself in the manifestation, even on the soul level, or in this case, inner mind level, It's subject to the three gunas. And there is the guna of sattva, of light and balance and harmony. There's the guna of rajas, of dynamism and energy. And there's the guna of tamas, which is helpless, which doesn't have that dynamism and doesn't have that light. And we shall see as we go through the canto, each of these Madonnas expresses her divine quality, her mission, but each time there's an answer from the lower nature of humanity, which is not touched by these higher qualities. It's like the very opposite of them. So the Madonna of sorrows, of compassion, is matched by the man of sorrows, who's that fellow who moans and groans down here and is angry but helpless. And then there's the Madonna of strength, who is a wonderful shining creature. She is Durga, she's Kali, she's Lakshmi. She says that she's all of these things. But there too, there's the asuric aspect or the rakshasic aspect in humanity, which answers that and which is not touched by all those divine qualities that she brings. He represents the opposite of all that. And then finally there's the Madonna of light. So when Savitri hears these Madonnas, then she hears the voice of the echo, the dark echo which comes. And then to each of them she makes a promise. So to this Madonna she says, I have to go and find my soul. I have to find the Lord, but then I will come back. And then I will give you, to this Madonna, she says, strength. And to the Madonna of strength, she says, wisdom. And to the last Madonna, she tells her what she has to do, the function that she has to do in order to bring man further into a more spiritual state. So we see the same structure. The Madonna speaks, the lower voice of the lower nature speaks, and then Savitri makes her promise. And this structure is repeated three times. And
I'm thinking I've been reading it wrongly all along, because I just took another look at this line, I am the spirit in a world of pain.
Yes.
So I think she is inwardly free, even though she's the beaten beast or whatever. I think she is detached, and therefore she's not...
That's why she's able to support all this.
I've always read it as, oh, this poor woman, she needs liberation,
no,
it's not, you
know? No.
So it's a different story, actually. She does have that soul power behind her.
Yes.
She is involved.
She's mistreated, but she is...
She's mistreated in us. These are the pains of her children here on earth.
Yeah, she has to share it. But
that's her role, to share it, to feel all that, and to support those who are suffering from it. Let's read on to the end of what she says. Would you like to read, sir?
Pity pleasures and pity, its pity cares, its bliss of troubles and bad, haggard mood of ills, earth's trail of sorrow, hopeless of relief, the unwanted tedious labor without joy, and the burden of misery and the strokes of fate, have been pity, leaning over pain, and the tender smile that heals the wounded heart, and the sympathy making life less hard to bear. Man has felt near my unseen face and hands, have taken the sufferer and his mole. I have lain down with the mangle and the sling. Should I carry on?
Please continue, yes.
I have leapt with the prisoner on his dungeon cell. I have heavy on my shoulders weighed the yoke of time. Nothing refusing of creation's load. I have borne all the no I still must bear. Perhaps when the world sinks into a last sleep, I too may sleep in dumb eternal peace.
Thank you. And this pity and sympathy and support, it's not only for human beings, it's for all sentient creatures. No? I've shared the fear-filled life of bird and beast. Sri Aurobindo knew exactly what all that was about, perhaps much more than we do. And then the troubles of the daily life of common men, ordinary people. The unwanted, tedious labor without joy. How many people have to live like that? And then there's even more. There's the strokes of fate. So if in living our lives we feel some kind of support and help, it's coming from this aspect of the mother or the soul. Man has felt near my unseen face and hands. So many people have reported this, no? That in their worst moments they felt some help enabling them to continue. So she says, I've borne everything and I know I have to go on bearing all this suffering, and perhaps in the end the world will sink into a last sleep and then I will be at peace. But that's not quite the end of what she says. Would you read, sir? Yes, please. I have borne the calm indifference. Yeah.
I have borne the calm indifference of heaven, washed nature's cruelty to suffering things, while God passed silent by nor turned to help, yet I have cried not out against his will. Yet I have not accused his cosmic law, only to change this great hard world of pain. A patient prayer has risen from my breast, a pallid resignation light my brow. Within me a blind faith and a mercy dwell. I carry the fire that never can be quenched, and the compassion that supports the suns. I am the hope that looks towards my God who never came to me till now. His voice I hear that ever says, I come. I know that one day he shall come at last.
Thank you. So we see that each of these lines adds something to the picture of this particular soul power. No? She's watching, she's bearing, she's enduring. No, that's the first thing. Yes, it's difficult to bear when we see things going terribly wrong and sufferings that we think should not happen, to have to bear the fact that heaven doesn't seem to care, that there doesn't seem to be any response. How difficult that is to bear. No? And usually, or very often, there comes a kind of accusing. But she doesn't do that, no. She says, I have not cried out against God's will, no. I have not accused his cosmic law. Only to change this great hard world of pain, a patient prayer has risen from my breast. So this patience and resignation, this is a Christian virtue again, you know, to accept the will of God, however hard to bear it is. No? He says, pallid, pale resignation. But within her is dwelling a blind faith. She continues to believe, and she has that will for mercy to relieve all that suffering. I carry the fire of faith that never can be quenched, and the compassion that supports the suns, as if the suns could not burn if it were not for the quality of divine compassion. And she is full of hope. I'm the hope that looks towards my God, even though he hasn't come. No? My God, who never came to me till now, I hear him saying, I'm coming, I'm coming. And I believe, I know that one day he shall come at last.
She doesn't have the wisdom. She only has the forbearance. She doesn't have the wisdom.
She doesn't have the
wisdom. Heaven is not indifferent. Only she doesn't realize.
Yeah, she doesn't have the wisdom.
I want to point out that I think it's important to be able to read these lines 79 to 80 the way they're written here. Yet have I cried not out. It takes concentration not to not to stumble. Instead of reading, yet I have cried not out.
Yeah.
He has purposely written it like that, I think.
Yes, it's much more powerful like that.
So that's one thing.
And then there's this line, God gave me love. He gave me not his force. So she's an expression of the soul's love and all its other wonderful qualities, but she doesn't have the strength. That's why I somehow connect her with the guna of tamas, of helplessness. Yeah.
I want to comment on that line 71, because I just read in Agenda 1 this morning before class that once mother had an experience of someone putting their hands on her shoulders. She said, I don't remember when it happened, but she said, I felt that it was the experience of Christ having the cross on his back.
Mm.
And she said, it wasn't so much the weight, it was the darkness.
Mm.
So mother experienced, you see, a similar thing, and yet she was all fire. She was, you know, within she was conscious and she knew what it was. She wasn't submitting the way it seems as
But these forces are complementary. They have to complement each other. And they need something more, which Savitri promises to bring them when she's completed her mission. But that yoke of time, no, it's when you have to bear a heavy load that you don't really want to bear. And you can't get out from under that yoke. But she also does not refuse it. She's not in a state of revolt. We will see now when we read about the echo that he is in a state of revolt and complaint. Andras, you would read?
She sees, and like an echo from below, answering her pathos of divine complaint, a voice of wrath took up the dire refrain. Growl of thunder or roar of angry beast. The beast that crouching growls within man's steps. Voice of a tortured titan once above. I am the man of sorrows. I am he who is nailed on the white cross of the universe. To enjoy my agony, God built the earth. My passion, he has made his drama's theme. He has sent me naked into his bitter world and beaten me with his rods of grief and pain, that I might cry and grovel at his feet and offer him worship with my blood and tears. I am Prometheus under the vulture's beak, man the discoverer of the undying fire. In the flame he kindled, burning like a moth. I am the seeker who can never find. I am the fighter who can never win. I am the runner who never touch his goal. Hell tortures me with the edges of my thought. Heaven tortures me with the splendor of my dreams.
Thank you. This first sentence is interesting, no? This first sentence, this echo from below, answering her pathos of divine complaint, there's a voice of wrath, of anger. No? A growl of thunder or the roar of an angry beast. And then he says that beast is growling here, living within the deeper levels of our nature. And then he says it's the voice of a tortured titan, once a god. The titans in Greek mythology are the gods who were there before the Olympic gods. And there's a whole story about the race of the titans and how they are deposed by Zeus, who punishes some of them. Some of them are destroyed and some are punished. This by endless torture. They've been gods, now they are cast down, there are higher powers in charge of them, and they are suffering and they are furious. They blame the gods, or in this case, God. The voice of terrible revolt and resentment. And he feels that God has created this whole earth just to enjoy my suffering. So Prometheus was such a titan in Greek mythology. He is the one who has stolen divine fire and given it to human beings. And his punishment is that he's thrust down into the depths, chained to a rock, and there's a vulture sent to eat his liver. And he does that all day, and then the night comes and the liver regenerates, and the next day he has to suffer the same pains all over again. Human beings sometimes feel like this. Even philosophers, there's the French philosopher Camus, who has written a book about Sisyphus. He was another of these titans. And his punishment was he had a huge rock which he had to push up to the top of the hill every day. And then it would come rolling down and he has to do it again. So there's some kind of feeling in us human beings that there's no end, that it all goes on and on and on, and it anyway isn't deserved. What have I done to deserve these sufferings? No. God is just imposing all this on me very unfairly. And there's a double thing. There's hell tortures me with the edges of my thought, my own consciousness and awareness. This is a torture. And heaven is torturing me with the splendor of my dreams. I've been given the capacity to dream these wonderful dreams, but I can never achieve any of them. Larry, would you go on? What profit have I?
Okay. What profit have I of my human soul?
No, the line before.
What profit have I of my animal birth? What profit have I of my human soul? I toil like the animal died. I am man the rebel, man the helpless serf. Fate and my fellows cheat me of my wage. I loosen with my blood my servitude sealed, and shake from my aching neck the oppressor's knees, only to seek new tyrants on my back. My teachers lessen me in slavery. I am shown God's stamp and my own signature upon the sorry contract of my fate. I have loved, but none has loved me since my birth. My fruit of works is given to other hands. All that is left me is my evil thoughts, my sordid quarrel against God and man, envy of the riches that I cannot share, hate of a happiness that is not mine. I know my fate will ever be the same. It is my nature's work that cannot change. I have loved for mine, not for the beloved's sake. I have lived for myself and not for others' lives. Each in himself is soul by nature's law. So God has made his harsh and dreadful world. So has he built the petty heart of man.
Thank you. Anything to ask?
I only wanted to say the cure for this fellow we saw in the film where he saw an ashram last night, this new film of Salman Khan that came out in July. He went through all these tortures of life and he had this, he was a devotee of Sri Ram in Hanuman. So he just shows the difference between someone who thinks like this and someone
who's a devotee.
Totally unnecessary condition this fellow is in.
For me it's a question that this is what profit. Mm. That from the whole process of life, what is the profit of it? This attitude. And what could be the purpose to have it here? That she mentioned it here.
Well, this is one of the aspects, no? This is the lower ego speaking. And what is significant is that all the divine pity and compassion of the mother of pity, of compassion, can't change this. It's not strong enough to change this element in us, which Sri Aurobindo expresses so perfectly. Let's try to get to the end of it. Yes. Yes, I mean it is an aspect of human life that those who seem to have the some higher knowledge, we try to teach people, oh, accept your fate. And then there's even the idea that this is the divine law, A, and B, that we have accepted it. Earlier in the poem, Narad said, oh man, don't blame anybody for the ills that you yourself have caused. And he describes how we have accepted to be incarnated here on earth. So here's the, you wrote, you accepted, you signed, you agreed to these conditions. And I think in The Life Divine, there's even a place where he says this whole setup really would not be acceptable. Everything that this fellow says would be absolutely right if it were not that we have been given the choice and we have accepted. Tough. But anyway, let's finish this point of view. Who is going to read next? Prakash.
Only by force and rules can man survive, for pity is a weakness in his breast. His goodness is a laxity in the nerves. His kindness an investment for God. His altruism is ego's other space. He serves the world that him the world may serve. If once the Titan strength could wake in me, if
Enceladus.
Enceladus from Etna could arise, I then would reign the master of the world, and like a god enjoy man's bliss and pain. But God has taken from me the ancient force. There is a dull constant in my sluggish heart, a fierce satisfaction with my special pangs, as if they made me taller than my kind. Only by suffering can I excel. I am the victim of titanic ills. I am the doer of demonic deeds. I was made for evil. Evil is my lot. Evil I must be, and by evil live. Not other can I do but be myself. What nature made me that I must remain? I suffer and toil and weep. I mourn and hate.
Thank you. Only by force and ruse, by trickery, can man survive. And our goodness, it's only because we are not strong enough to be bad. Goodness is a laxity in the nerves, a weakness. We want to be approved of. Kindness is an investment for return. And if we think we are very altruistic and want to help other people, it's just the other face of the ego. We serve the world so that the world will serve us. But then he says, if once that old strength that I had could wake up in me, if Enceladus from Etna could arise, there's a Titan imprisoned under the volcano of Etna in Sicily. That's Enceladus. He's another of these old Titans. I forget what he did and why he's there, but sometimes he lets out his wrath. If I could just escape like that, then I would reign the master of the world and I would enjoy man's bliss and pain. But what he's done, God's taken away from me the force. The Madonna said, he hasn't given me the force. Yeah, he feels that he had it, but it's been taken away. And so there's something in him which is accepting all this, even reveling in it. And I've been made like that, and that's my lot. And so that's the way I have to be. I cannot change. And I have to suffer and toil and weep and moan and hate, and I'm going to enjoy doing that as much as I can. Make the most of it. So then comes Savitri's reply. Can I read that? And Savitri heard the voice, the echo heard, and turning to her being of pity spoke, Madonna of suffering, mother of grief divine, thou art a portion of my soul put forth to bear the unbearable sorrow of the world. Because thou art, men yield not to their doom, but ask for happiness and strive with fate. Because thou art, the wretched still can hope. But thine is the power to solace, not to save. One day I will return, a bringer of strength, and make thee drink from the Eternal's cup. His streams of force shall triumph in thy limbs, and wisdom's calm control thy passionate heart. Thy love shall be the bond of humankind. Compassion, the bright key of nature's acts. Misery shall pass, abolished from the earth. The world shall be freed from the anger of the beast, from the cruelty of the Titan and his pain. There shall be peace and joy forevermore. Shall we stop there for today? Yeah. We'll close hearing Mother's readings of the passages from this section.
Mother of grief divine, Thou art devotion of my soul, put forth to bear the unbearable soul of the world. But thine is the power to solace, not to save. One day I will return, a bringer of strength, and make thee drink from the eternal cup.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.